Think you can hear me?
I'm sure of it.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 9, Amanda Unplugged. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Still bringing joy. Still bringing joy. Speaking of bringing joy, that's what my air conditioner is doing to my office right now. So I apologize if that sound is interfering with your joy in listening to today's podcast, but it is necessary for my quality of life and also for my life. It's very hot and humid in New York City today. And speaking of New York City things, episode 60 of Again With This is dropping August 20th. Let's watch Thomas Calabro on Law & Order Original Flavor. We are watching season 1, episode 4, Kiss the Girls and Make Them Die, Boo. That is available for purchase on Amazon or Google Play. You can join us for that discussion at patreon.com/againwiththis. We cover all sorts of things. And we're looking forward to reviewing this for you. That's patreon.com/againwiththis.
It's a good one. I always forget how early in the run it is. Season 1, episode 4.
Yeah. And who he was supposed to be and which headlines it was supposed to be ripped from. We have many, many notes. You can hear them all. Any level of support gets you that episode.
Indeed. Well, let's start with this episode, beginning with our, E-plot. Kimberly gets a job hosting a radio show, This is it's wild. We'll get into all the reasons. Let's just begin. At the office, Peter yells at Michael and Sydney for hiring an actor to stalk Kimberly, R.I.P. Mark Paul, clip 2.
This is really sick. Not to mention unprofessional, unethical, and illegal.
I mean, this is pretty rich.
Don't talk to us like that, Jack Wagner.
This is also rich coming from him, you know.
Not really.
Because Michael knows and says the shady shit that Peter's been up to as Jack's doctor and, you know, reminds him of that. We will get to Jack. And then Kimberly herself enters for her therapy session with Peter, arguably the most unethical thing he's done this season since he is a surgeon.
Yeah, what? Doctors, 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 doctors. Like, they're not all interchangeable.
No.
Psychiatry, surgery.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-mm. Anyway, Kimberly's also there to thank Michael and Sydney for showing her she's completely sane, debatable, and even brought them flowers, and nice flowers, not from Ralph's, just like brown paper wrapping on them. You can see them in the visual aids. And then the next day, Kimberly's listening to the Dr. Joyce Brothers call-in show on Peter's dumb radio whilst playing solitaire when Dr. Brothers calls her and actually appears on camera in a suit we both agree was kind of badass. I was glad to see that in your notes of the visual aids. We're both like, okay, I'm not mad at this, mustard yellow plaid number, but.
No, with the bow, with the blouse bow and everything. I mean, it's very her.
It is.
And yet, I just have to wonder what was going on in this, like, media ecosystem at this time to make this seem like a good idea for either brand, but whatever.
Right. Anyway, here's what happens. Clip 3.
You've been calling me on the air a lot lately.
Yes, I have. Is there a problem with that?
Oh, just the opposite.
We're about to start letting some of our listeners fill in as hosts on a trial basis.
You mean show hosts on the radio?
Yes.
It's something new we want to try as a way of increasing audience empathy.
And what, you're asking me?
Yes.
You're one of our most popular callers.
Really?
Yes. Why don't you come into the station and we'll talk?
What would be good for you today? Look, if you'd rather not, that's fine.
No, I'd love to. It's just that tomorrow would be better. I have to get out of something first.
Something that's keeping me at home.
Okay. This is not to say people who have problems of their own are not capable of giving very good advice, because everyone has problems and everyone wants to give advice. I get it.
Presumably, she also did a psychiatry rotation. Like, let's not forget, sure, she was a doctor herself.
Right. But if the reason that Dr. Brothers even knows who she is that she's been calling, like, multiple times a day from what we've seen, like, why is her outreach, we want to give you a job and not let me connect you with a therapist who can actually help you one-on-one and not through the radio?
Yeah. Also, I've cleared this with your parole officer. Like,
right,
she killed someone.
Mm-hmm.
Eh?
Indirectly. But yes, she did. Someone died. And, you know, she's got this monitor on. Of course, that is the something that's keeping her at home. I was hoping we would see her try and, like, track down a cyberpunk to remove it for her, like, hacker style. Mark Paul, perhaps. That's another sideline maybe he does. But no. We see Kimberly the next day as she sticks her hand in a big bowl of ice cubes and then in the waffle iron, fortifying herself with scotch before smashing the top down hard, clip four.
Okay. I don't get it.
I think she just broke her hand and she was icing it so she wouldn't feel it as much. Like she just numbed it.
Okay.
And that's why it went crunch, because she just broke her hand.
I thought it was like she was freezing the plastic so that it would be more brittle and then she would, but I don't know why she would use the waffle iron for that.
Right.
This is all extremely stupid.
It is. Including that Foley work with this, which is clearly someone like just crunching a thin plastic, like disposable water bottle.
Yeah, bubble wrap, totally. Yeah.
But anyway, the point is for her to like smash up all the bones in her hand so that the monitor will slide off. And fortunately, we don't see the mangled hand because no one could afford that kind of special effects at this time. We just see the monitor fall on the floor. Thank you. When we see her next, Dr. B is ushering her into a studio and asking what happened to her bandaged wrist. Kimberly claims an accident ironing. Dr. Brothers asks if she's a homemaker, and Kimberly makes a hilarious yikes face that you can see in the visual aids before dodging that she's done a lot of different things. And, like, I know showbiz can be loosey-goosey, but is anyone at the station going to ask Kimberly for a resume or something before they just put someone on the air who definitely has mental health issues? Because she can't stop calling the show.
Maybe enter her name into Lycos.
Right. But what we're seeing here is just exceptional, really unimpeachable judgment all around. Clip five.
You're very inner-directed. You work hard at your own issues. But you know how to share your insights, too.
Well, I have been involved in the mental health profession.
I thought so. Any radio experience?
No, I'm just an avid listener.
Well, let me show you around, teach you the setup, and then tomorrow night you can give it a try.
Just like that?
From the first time we spoke, I felt there was something special about you.
Nailed it.
That's not wrong. Technically.
Right. Right. And yet, wrong.
And yet. Yeah, so wrong. Yeah.
So, that's where we leave these two for now. Let's go on to our D plot. Michael helps Matt the only way he knows how, crookedly. Evidently, Mrs. Fielding was right about Matt's plans, because when we see him, he's at the office to get a recommendation from Michael for his return to med school. So that's happening. Sydney is happy for him, but Michael laughs in his face at the idea because apparently he didn't know that Matt was pre-med for 2 years either. And Sydney finally interrupts their verbal sparring to shove the paperwork at Michael and order him to sign it. So then Sydney finds Michael at Shooter's that night, moping that someone's cousin got the chief of staff job he wanted. She suggests that he work harder at marrying into the right families, which is pretty good advice. Then,
true,
Matt joins them back in that Tanqueray AIDS ride t-shirt. Love to see the continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear this, clip six.
Shouldn't you be memorizing bones or something?
Study break.
It looks to me like you might want to lay off the coffee for a while, Matt.
Yeah, I'm going to be up late.
He's right. You look like hell.
I appreciate that keen observation. It really boosts my confidence.
Hey, you want some advice? You know the right stuff to be a doctor. You know, doctors have to hurt people to heal them, and you're too damn sensitive.
Thank you.
No problem.
You know, you're really a jerk sometimes, Michael.
Well, do you care if he goes to med school or not?
That's not the point. The point is, he put it on the line for you once. Remember? You faked your blood alcohol level.
Oh, can't you forget that ancient history?
I just don't think you should forget it. You know, you really could use an ally at the hospital, Michael. Everybody else hates you.
Shocked anyone remembered that. But thank you, Sydney, for that reminder that things happened before season four.
Yeah, we would be lost without you. Thank you. A couple of days later, Michael runs into a casually dressed Matt in the hall at the hospital, clearing out the last of his stuff from his office. Matt just took a practice test yesterday, but doesn't think it went well and is stressed out waiting to find out whether he got back into med school or not. And when he's gone, Michael looks thoughtful in the hall and then snaps into scheming. You can, like, see all of these feelings on his face. I made a GIF. You can see in the visual aids. It's like just the calculations. It's great. Mm-hmm. And heads around a corner to sidle into a records room, get on the phone, and pose as a Dr. Hoffman who needs his database password. And it's the past, so of course this is information that is freely given out on the phone. Mm-hmm. Michael looks up Matt's test results and sees that he's failed barely. The cutoff is 500, apparently, and Matt got 498. So Matt just easily clicks on Matt's score and changes it to a 502, because that's also a thing that can happen in the past, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations to Matt.
And congratulations to the makers of the Chicago font on our gracing our screens once again.
Indeed. Let's move on to our C-plot. You're never going to believe this, but there's still a lot of drama for Allison and Haley. So we open on Brooke and Billy with her lying in bed, complaining she has something in her eye. Billy claims it's a pretext to get him back into bed, which seems to be correct, and then exposits that he's meeting a new client that day and shouldn't be late. But when he stops off at the bathroom, he knocks some stuff over and then returns to confront her with the diaphragm she never put in. And she flirtatiously confirms his suspicions in clip 7.
Why would I use it when I've been trying to get pregnant all month?
Excuse me? How could you do this and not tell me?
I want to have your baby. Is that a crime? I was doing this for us.
No, you were doing it for you and manipulating me.
Billy, I don't manipulate you.
Me and everybody else. It's like breathing. You don't even think about it. And I'm getting sick of it.
So am I, because A, your acting is completely inappropriate to what the lines are, mm-hmm. and B, she has already done two or three things that are grounds for dismissal where I'm from. I understand that this is a soap opera and she's hot, but this is not pulling the goalie without the discussion is like, I don't know, maybe have any reaction?
I mean,
it's Billy. Ugh, whatever. I don't know why I bother. But, like, this is getting really frustrating, especially since Kristen Davis is acting the shit off this part. Like, yeah. She's so bratty and pissy and fucked up. But then, on the other hand, her hair is so shiny. And it's just
so
like,
pretty.
I completely understand why people are putting up with this. obnoxious as she is, it's, like, fully realized obnoxious. Not a word, go with it.
Sure.
But like Andrew Hsu does not belong in this plot line.
Yeah. He is not capable.
No. Like, you know those scenes in The Godfather where they're like arguing about something and then actually it's Sofia Coppola who's like a baby and she's screaming in the background. And apparently someone like literally stuck the baby with a hot pin to make sure that she was screaming in all of these takes. Like, someone get a hot pin for Andrew Hsu.
Yeah. Yeah, he's his motivations are just like, I would say a moving target, but they don't move. They just sort of like lurch around and like
a napping target.
Yeah, but they've always been a problem. Like he was the issue through all of season three with like the ever changing story of why he and Allison broke up.
Right.
So I don't know how much it's just the writers trying to like keep it in his strike zone. Which is very small, yeah. I guess, but...
Yeah, but then it's like, okay, we'll just let this character play off him and do all the work, which is fine, mm-hmm. except that either it's a very big character like Kristen Davis who yeah. throws his shortcomings into even sharper relief.
Yes.
Or it's Eeyore.
Right.
Which is like, let's pair this beige with some gray. Like, let's not do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, there are some responses that anyone could do, mm-hmm. like a kid could do, and right. it just is not happening. And sometimes it's hilarious, I will not lie. Like, sometimes it totally works in spite of itself, but yes. this is not one of those times.
No, and all it would take to excuse, like, why they're not getting into it is him being like, I can't talk about this right now, I have to go, but we are going right. to talk about it. And that doesn't happen either. Anyway. Yeah. So then Billy gets to work where Allison wants to yammer at him about the clothes that she needs to get to fit into Haley's fancy life. But when she notices that he's down, he tells her why. Clip 8.
I had a little fight with Brooke. No big deal.
You want to talk about it?
I'll send you a memo.
This is what I mean. It's like, that is so not appropriate and flip. Like, you almost think that, if you didn't know better, that he's going for some kind of, like, Gen X who cares thing. Mm-hmm. But he can't go for things. That's not... There's, like, the two beige values on the card, and that's it.
Right. I will say, the one consistent character note they've given him this season is he cannot keep a secret.
Like that's true.
Anytime he cannot wait to just betray people's confidences, like whenever they occur. But anyway,
yeah,
he declines to tell Allison more than that. Speaking of whom, Allison and Haley then are talking business on their way to the dinner at home. He likes that she's a working woman, so she asks if his late wife had a career, and he takes 500 years to say anything, so she immediately apologizes for being nosy. And then she's saved by the doorbell. He says Charles will get it, but she gave all the staff the night off because she ordered them pizza. Before they can dig in, the phone rings. And there's another brief moment of awkwardness as he asks her to go get a Bordeaux while he talks on the phone and then apologizes as he remembers that she is sober. She's completely fine about it and goes, that's not the issue. But then she can't find the door to the wine cellar, and one of the doors she tries is locked. Clip 9.
Don't ever go in that room.
What is it?
It's private. Is that understood?
Of course.
Okay, Blackbeard. Jesus.
Like, seriously.
It's a little excessive. Especially after we see it. Like, give me a break. But.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, I mean, don't ever go in that room. You'll be creeped out and leave.
Yes.
Spoiler.
You won't be able to sleep. I'm done doing this for your sake.
Yes. The last Mrs. Haley's career was collecting creepy crap from a Faulkner story.
We'll get to it. So the next day.
We sure will.
Brooke calls Allison in for a progress meeting on her father's account, which like, oh, is that what the kids are calling it nowadays? Allison just says it's early. So Brooke immediately changes the subject to how Allison is enjoying her house, to which Allison airily says she likes it, then admits she finds it intimidating. Don't tell Brooke that. Trying to seem casual, she asks about the locked door. Does Brooke know what's in there? Clip 10.
It's my mother's. Do you really want to hear about this?
Of course.
Well, maybe you should check it out for yourself. This opens the door, and you'll see why you can never compete with her.
And why that's an outstanding thing for you.
Seriously.
Shudder.
But seriously. So that night, Allison takes the key that Brooke gave her and lets herself into Mrs. Armstrong's office or dressing room or walk-in closet.
She shed.
Yeah, this bitch loved porcelain figurines. I'll tell you that for free.
Oh my God. They put this, it's not just a creepy dolly, it's a creepy, like, Harlequin clown dolly in the foreground that I'm like, I don't think I get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never find out because I'm like on my own roof screaming.
I remember when those were like such a thing in the 80s. Both of my youngest aunts on both sides, who were like, you know, 8 or 6 years older than me, they collected them in the 80s. Like that they had the porcelain heads and then those soft, like doll bodies, but then also porcelain hands. And if their feet were showing and bare, their feet were porcelain too. Who thought?
Nana actually got me one, and I was just like, I was still too young to like act like it was okay at all. And I like basically dropped it like it was hot.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, so that's a no on these? I mean, okay.
Yeah.
More for you guys.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, Haley catches her just having her way with everything. She's like picking up a bottle of perfume when he walks in and comes in to yell at her. Clip 11.
I thought I told you never to come in here.
Brooke thought I might want.
Brooke, it's not Brooke's place to give that permission.
She said your wife.
My wife? My wife what? Looks like this. Wore clothes like this. What are you trying to do, huh? Learn her scent? Discover who she was? Become her?
I'm not looking for her. I'm looking for you.
Ooh.
I mean, but that's not a bad line.
It's not. It's pretty good.
Especially given that Perry King is, I would say, not at his best in this scene.
I agree. They're clearly trying to pivot him to something, and it's like in process, but we don't know what it is yet.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember what it is, and I'm sort of like, yeah, this is okay.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, at Shooters, Brooke tries to cozy up to Billy after their fight. He doesn't think they've worked through their issues yet. And at this point, the fight was the previous morning, so fair if he thinks they need to have a discussion about it. But from what we've seen, he's just been seething and giving her the silent treatment, so like, grow up. But anyway, Brooke immediately apologizes to him first for not being honest and then tells him he can apologize to her for stomping out. And he denies that he did. And she pretends to accept that and then promises to use her diaphragm unless they both decide she shouldn't. Clip 12.
You better put in your diaphragm.
All right.
Fucking Dave. All right, clip 12, please.
This better be the last time that you ever pull a stunt like that.
Totally, dude. She is done. She is for sure never going to do anything like that again. You picked a winner.
Yep. She's definitely learned her lesson.
Yeah, she keeps having consequences for her bad actions. So, you know, why wouldn't she?
Cough. Yeah, totally.
All right, back to the mansion where Allison is moving out while Haley trails behind her, promising to try harder to make it work if she stays. She says all her relationships have been ruined by secrets and she won't let it happen anymore. So Haley decides it's time for some backstory. Clip 13.
I married Laurel because I got her pregnant. And because she was rich.
Thought she was supposed to be the big love of your life.
The big lie of my life. We had that contemporary curse. A thoroughly modern marriage. So free, so adult, so empty.
Why stay married?
I thought it was best for Brooke. Laurel, I think, just did it to punish me. She flaunted her affairs.
Haley, why is that room there then?
I don't know. For Brooke, maybe. Or maybe as a reminder of the charade, what never to do again.
Brooke said.
Brooke doesn't know anything about this. She thinks I still miss Laurel. I'm sure that she sent you in there just to cause a fight between us. And it worked.
Why are you telling me this now?
Because I love you. Like I've never loved anyone. Please give me another chance.
Why should I?
Because you love me too.
And because Sweeps is coming. Guys, you've known each other 17 minutes.
That's A. B is, like, leaving aside whatever Haley's feelings for Brooke may be, he knows that she and Allison are not friends. So why would he arm Allison with this huge secret about Brooke's sainted mother?
Yeah.
It's very disloyal.
Yeah, it is. Also, Laurel.
Yeah.
Not Phyllis. Okay.
Anyway, speaking of Brooke, the next day she comes into the office late to tell Billy she's pregnant. And he obviously thinks she's kidding. Clip 14.
No, really, Billy. I'm pregnant.
This kind of joke isn't funny after what happened.
It's not a joke. It's our baby.
You can't be pregnant. We were going to discuss it first, and you're going to start using your diaphragm again.
Okay. Does,
not how it works.
Does Billy actually not know how human gestation works? I feel like it's possible he doesn't, because he's not saying you can't be pregnant with an edge of you will end this pregnancy. Not that they would have a cutie pie character we're supposed to think. Like, Billy, say that anyway.
Right.
But wow, as the conversation goes on, Brooke apparently figures out he does need to have the process explained to him. Clip 15.
This happened weeks ago. It's just now showing up.
No.
Are you saying that you don't want this child?
Yes, that's what you're saying. That's what you should be saying. Say it.
I'm really having a baby.
Mm-hmm. Keep it private for a while.
Why?
Well, I just want to get used to it ourselves before we go public with it.
A baby.
That feels like an ad lib from Kristen Davis, where she's like, give me something.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I mean, whatever, we'll get into it in future episodes, but, like, I just assumed that she was faking it at this point. You?
I did, too. Yes, yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Because it's, the timing is too convenient.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, like, it's soapy, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know she's young and that there are women who, in their youth, like, you just wink at them and they get pregnant. And maybe that's what we're supposed to think is the case with Brooke, but it does seem... Given this, that we are in a soap, I would suspect this.
Yeah. I mean, look, I could furnish a whole sheaf of notes about this, having been, 70s Buncey, had a diaphragm, but it's like, you know what, whatever. They'll all be dead soon.
Let us arrive at our B plot. Richard makes a place for Joe that has a lot of fallout. Jane hustles into Richard's office to announce they're going to Hawaii, but they have the summer line to work on, he says. She wants to do an inspiration shoot in Hawaii to give them new direction, and Richard is not having it. Clip 16.
Oh, is this to help you grow to love me?
Richard, I just want to spend time with you. Give me a chance.
Look, Jane, I don't stir your passion. I can deal with it.
Fine. Then we'll consider the Hawaii shoot strictly business, but I still think it makes sense to go.
Okay. Then we should take Joe along to shoot the locations in that case. Joe, would you come in here, please?
Richard, we can pick up a photographer there.
Nobody knows what we're looking for like she does.
She's way too busy. She's working with layout, designing the catalog.
Catalog can wait.
Oh, Jane, catch your snap.
Yeah.
We've complained a lot about Patrick Muldoon's acting, and I stand by all of that. But I think locked into the mode of contempt for Jane, he's doing a good job with that.
I agree. There's some bonky line readings in this subplot that I, like Andrew Shoes, enjoy for their total bizarreness. But this is working.
Yeah,
for me, I don't think I understand in the larger sense why all of this has to be happening. to us and to Joe and Jake, but he's enjoyable. His hair is so rude, though. To us, to him.
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, he immediately calls Joe in to ask if she wants to go, which obviously she does, and Jane is pissed. Then we go over to Shooters, where Shelley tells Jake his books are a disaster. He sarcastically asks if he's bankrupt yet, and she purrs that he's merely financially challenged. And then Joe comes in to tell him she has to cancel their date so she can get all her shit done before her business trip. He doesn't know why getting a swimsuit is on her to-do list, so she tells him where they're going. And while Shelley eavesdrops, a fight ensues. Clip 17.
Oh, that makes it okay, I guess.
What? This is a great opportunity for me.
Well, don't let a little thing like a promise to me stand in your way.
Oh, for God's sakes, Jake.
What? I'm wrong. We didn't have a date.
Would you just grow up?
I'm sure you'd do well in that swimsuit competition.
Rude. What's annoying to me about this plot line is that, like, prior to this, it was a lot of Joe complaining that Jake would never go anywhere with her because he was working at Shooters trying to make it a success. And now that Joe's having them both have the same initials really fucked me up. Now that Joe's career is going well, he's like, how dare you have a job, basically.
Yeah. And also that, like, this as the character has been written to date is not a reaction that I believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, all along he's sort of been like, no, Shelley, I'm with Joe, but then not really giving her a hard no, as it were.
Yes.
So, this whole setup, again, I understand. Sweeps are coming. Obstacles make your drama, blah, blah, blah. But it's just dumb. Also, it's Shelley.
It's Shelley.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as soon as Joe is stomped out, Shelley zooms up to Jake to comfort him by getting him to dance with her, which gives her the idea for Shooters to put on a dance night, get a DJ, charge a cover, and then calls Jake a genius. And he lets her, though he looks a little dubious. And the next day he shows up at the studio looking for Joe. Richard offers to relay a message. Jake declines to give one, but promises he only needs to see her for a minute, which leads to some posturing on both sides. Clip 18.
You think you know her well enough to speak for her?
Yeah, I do.
Richard, we've got an angry buyer on line 3. I need you right away. Hi, Jake.
Hey. Well, I guess you better get that.
Good one.
Is the buyer angry because Jane still works there with her shitty faux satin designs? Because I'd be pretty pissed. If I were the Macy's buyer, I'd be like, what is this? Chris. Yeah.
So as soon as Richard's gone, Jake goes looking for the dark room and he knocks and Joe is like, yeah. So he enters and then it's a fight. Clip 19.
Well, my God, you can't just come barging in like that.
You said come in.
I said, yeah.
Well, I thought, yeah, man, come in.
You're lucky these prints are fixed.
Now, would someone who is on his second go-round of dating a professional photographer not know darkroom etiquette by now? I feel like he would.
Yeah. Also, Joe, like, those doors always have a bolt.
Yeah.
Throw it so that doesn't happen. You're at work.
Yep. Anyway, Jake is there to note that since they've been having missed connections lately, he wanted her to come to the dance night at Shooters that night. Great idea, making an event a success, giving no notice to your potential patrons that it's happening.
Yeah.
Okay. She says she'll try, but she has 1,000 chores before her trip, and he's like, where am I? 960? Again, people have jobs, dude. Get a grip.
Yeah.
She reminds him that the trip's going to be great for her portfolio, and he self-deprecatingly wonders whether that means it would be politically incorrect for him to wish she weren't going. Ugh, the misuse of this phrase, never not annoying.
Yeah.
Please
and
stop.
Rife at this time in human history.
And
Brandon.
On other shows in the Starverse, exactly, Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
But Joe sighs they can call it hopelessly romantic. She thinks Richard is mostly taking her to chaperone Jane, but Jake thinks Richard is after Joe. And she tells him not to be paranoid and promises to be there tonight if she can. So this big dance night coincides with Halloween. The only cast member who bothered with a costume of any kind is Amanda, taking a break from sitting at Jack's bedside, we will get to it, by sticking on a mini witch hat and coming down for shots. looking fabulous, by the way, mm-hmm. but, you know, really helping herself to the stock, taking a lot of advantage of their relationship.
Mm-hmm. If the costume is drunk witch, it's outstanding.
It is. So then Shelley and her gold sequin dress come gloat about how much money they're making, and she suggests dance night every Tuesday and Thursday, and he agrees, telling her to run it. And he asks if she has seen Joe, and Shelley claims that Joe called. She's working late with Richard, and Jake smiles disappointedly. And at the studio the next day, Richard confronts Jane with an invoice that she signed hiring a photographer in Honolulu. She tries to spin it like this dude is mostly going to be their guide or something, but Richard says she's obviously still trying to get Joe off the trip. And Jane counters that he's using their company to finance a fling. Clip 20.
A fling? This junket was your idea.
Yeah, for us to go, Richard.
For what, Jane? So you could take me someplace romantic to tell me you don't really love me?
I'm still wearing this in case you've forgotten.
I haven't forgotten. I'm just trying to.
I mean, point.
Yeah.
Definite point. I mean, I kind of wanted him to be like, yeah, actually, I'd like it back. Can you leave it in the little ashtray on my desk? Bye.
So Jane stomps out and Richard phones an associate we don't know, asking her to call Jane to New York for some kind of fake emergency immediately. So then Jake is walking out into the courtyard just in time to run into Jane on her way to the airport. He thought they weren't leaving for Hawaii until later, but she says she's not going and relishes telling him how she got jammed out. Jake is dismayed that Joe didn't tell him herself. Clip 21.
Well, if you don't believe me, you can talk to Joe.
I think I'm through talking with her.
I'm sure they'll get a lot done between the coconut oil massages and the double Mai Tais.
How could she do this?
Welcome to the Friends of Joe Club. Any damn fool can join.
Now, Jake, you know that Jane hates Joe now because of blowing up her spot with the whole fake engagement. So why would you take what she says at face value?
Yeah.
One wonders.
Also, given that Joe's BFs tend to end up DED, maybe you should just go, you know, fix up your bike poolside and drive on your way.
Yeah. Good point. So Jake is on his way back to his place when a group of kids come in trick-or-treating, and he just gives them each a dollar out of his wallet, which you can see in a wonderful gif I made. And then we hear this, clip 22.
Don't you have any candy?
No.
Slam. So good.
Also, the no. So good.
Yeah.
A legit LOL was had by me when I watched
same.
It. So here's why Joe didn't tell Jake that Jane wasn't coming to Hawaii. Richard didn't tell Joe until they were walking out to the airport limo, which is where we rejoin them. And by the way, in the Haley, Allison, Brooke, Billy storyline and the Peter, Amanda storyline, it's the next day at this point, but we're supposed to think we're still on Halloween here. Guys, get your editing shit together. But anyway. Joe is visibly upset by this obvious fuckery and says that if Jane isn't going to Hawaii, she's not either. Clip 23.
Jake was right. You planned this whole setup just to get me alone.
No, wait a minute. This is a business trip, okay? You can't bow out now. I need a photographer who knows our line.
Well, I know your line now, Richard, and I'm not going to fall for it again.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad
not
at
bad.
All.
There's mm-hmm. a lot of good one-liners in this episode, actually.
Yeah. And also, I think someone was brought in to remind the current writers of, like, show Bible shit, because mm-hmm. there's been a bunch of stuff like that, that not in this particular sequence.
Right, right.
Generally. Yep. But that's back to Muldoon being, like, rock setting his lines. I don't really understand. Why? I mean, I do understand why he was cast. And once the shirt comes off in this plot line, you'll understand, too.
Very true. And as Joe starts to walk back up to her place, he stops her and promises to be a perfect gentleman. He wants to show her the real me. She thinks she's seen it and is going to spend the weekend with the real Jake. And then I don't know what the hell day it is when we see Jake going into his office at Shooters to see Shelley working on his books again. He's in a different shirt. I don't know. Whatever. This happens. Clip 24.
And on the laptop, ladies and gentlemen, we have Miss Shelley Hansen.
My next number, I'd like to do some Chuck Berry.
What?
You should do me.
Does Joe know where you are?
Joe is otherwise engaged.
Jake, you know how I feel about you.
Yeah,
You mentioned something to my cleanup crew.
Look, you're a little toasted right now. Why don't you let me take you home?
Okay. You be the designated driver.
I don't get it.
They start making out. And then Joe walks in.
Have a nice trip.
See you next fall. Sorry.
I'm glad we both had the same reaction to Shelley's, like, bit. It's such a non sequitur that putting on the Betty Boop voice or whatever that's supposed to be, it's very strange.
Yeah, what was that?
I don't know.
Yeah. But, also, I don't think I understand. Like, are we supposed to think that Shelley, it, like, really is in love with Jake, and so she wants to make sure that he's definitely broken up with Joe and that he's doing this sober? Or is she, like, schemey pants?
Right.
Because here again, the acting is somewhat opaque.
Yeah.
Just leave it there.
I mean, I think that when she stops him or pauses him making advances on her, it's because he has been, as you said, ambiguously turning her down prior to this mm-hmm. point. And she just wants to be like, I don't want you to jerk me around. Like, if this is going to be some kind of bullshit where you are, you know, you start something and then are like, wait, I can't, then
fair.
I'm not interested, perhaps. Yeah. But we might be giving them too much credit.
Maybe.
Finally, our A plot, a coma doesn't stop Jack being a very bad man. We rejoin Amanda looking morose as she sits on Jack's hospital bed, and a nurse, calling her Mrs. Parisi, tells her to get some sleep. Amanda corrects the nurse on their status, and she snits that it's a shame it took something like this to reunite them. Hey, how about mind your own business, lady? Jesus.
Yeah, really.
So she then reports that Jack is stable, and miracles can happen. Some coma patients respond when their loved ones talk to them about meaningful moments. So once she's gone, Amanda gets closer to Jack's head for a monologue. Clip 25.
I was just thinking about some of our special times we had together. Like the time I forgot to fold your socks and you pounded my face into the bedpost. I needed 18 stitches that time. Or remember when you broke my hand because I wore the wrong color dress? Remember how I cried all night? Remember this, Jack. For every black eye and bruise you ever gave me, you son of a bitch, I hope you die.
Yeah, fair. Same.
Yep, same. I will say that spreading this much mustard on Amanda's past injuries when we had never heard anything about any of this before is not what I would have done.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's no, like, one abusive time is enough. You don't have to, like, prove her case. She was right to go.
Yes.
But all of this is like, please don't talk about, like, things that would leave visible scars that are not visible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
I
think part
seems like a lot.
I agree. But I think part of it is just like resetting at the top of the episode. So new viewers are like, oh, this is what's happening.
Right.
Could but be. I agree. They don't need to give that much detail.
Yeah.
The next day, Nick finds Amanda at the bedside, claiming to be hopeful about Jack's odds. He has some papers for her to sign. She tries to dodge, claiming the timing is, you know, bad and distasteful. But he's there on behalf of the family who don't want her to inherit Jack's money. She doesn't want his money, in which case she just needs to sign paperwork to that effect, which also indemnifies Jack against any other claims she might make against him in the future. And Amanda, no dummy, tells Nick to send it to her lawyer. He would rather do it without lawyers, which is funny since he is a lawyer. But anyway, when he pushes his luck, she shoves him. But he warns her to stay on his good side because he's the white sheep of the family. And the next day, Sydney, in respectful black, steals a floral arrangement off a stand in the hallway at the hospital and tries to go in and see Jack. When the nurse at the desk says only immediate family is allowed in, Sydney asks what Uncle Jack's current status is, just in time for Nick to come up behind her, smirking as he adds a little more detail before introducing himself and letting Sydney know he knows she's full of shit. And she tries to cover that niece is a polite word for what she was to Jack. Nick hopes she's not trying to get any of his money. And Sydney is intrigued to learn there is some. So then Peter finds Amanda at Shooter's getting drunk and tries to stop her. Seeing their struggle as Amanda fights him off, Michael comes over to get between them. But when she starts spouting off about Jack, Peter picks her up in a fireman's carry and drags her out. And he's a lot taller than Michael. So Michael's like, you've got this covered. And when we see Peter and Amanda next, he's helping her into her apartment as she is wasted. He tries to leave while he's still being appropriate, but she stops him, ordering him to put her to bed first. Basically pushes him into the bedroom and then tells him to undress her, and he doesn't, trying again to leave while she's still decent, although not turning her head to the side so she doesn't choke if she gets sick later. I will note, doctor. But she holds him in place and starts kissing on him, and this is what he wants, so his horniness wins over his manners. I won't say his understanding of consent because I don't assume Peter has one.
He tried to kill her, so let's assume he doesn't.
Yeah. So the next morning, Peter and Amanda apparently are post-fucking as he tries to rouse her with some orange juice, which you can see in the visual aids, and it looks like fresh squeezed, so I was impressed.
It did look extremely delicious. It also made me laugh because it was like, she's real hungover, buddy, so unless you gave her the David Silver orange juice, back it up with that. Coffee in a banana bag or get out.
Yes. Yeah, you're a doctor. Can't you give her, like, prescription, you know, electrolytes something, or
potassium,
something?
I don't know.
Exactly. Anyway, she tries to slap him off her, claiming that he took advantage of her the night before. He says he fought her off until the very end, which, though true, is not the point. And she complains that it's hard work wishing Jack dead on a full-time basis, and she needed Peter to support her, not seduce her. He says he loves her and starts kissing her arm, but she tells him to get out. And he throws a pillow at her face, telling her she should figure out what she wants. Ew. And then the same nurse from before is fussing around Jack, humming, when Amanda enters and asks her this, clip 26.
What are you so damn cheery about?
Okay. I feel like someone thought this was a good Amanda line, given that her whole thing is like she's the bitch of the show, but that only Heather Locklear knew. It would not make sense for Amanda to come in with like bitchy energy to this kind stranger. And also, she wouldn't want this person to know she's rooting for Jack to die. Like, so I think she softens it with her tone.
Yeah.
Rather than try to like get the line changed, but it was very noticeable.
I mean, yeah, bad line, good, best delivery possible, given that it doesn't work. But I mean, so much of these machinations in the subplot are like, if Jack is in the mafia, not that there's any such thing, but like, why would they send a lawyer to create a paper trail?
Right. So,
like, I don't want any of your organized credit. Like, whatever. We saw this on The Sopranos. That's not how it works.
Mm-hmm. So the nurse says she thinks Amanda's attentions are paying off. Jack is doing much better. And the doctor even says he's on the verge of waking up. And Amanda's like, oh, fuck. And goes straight from there to Peter's office. As Sydney picks up the phone to eavesdrop, she hears Amanda report on Jack's recovery. Clip 27.
Well, that's great. Now nobody can accuse anyone of murder.
Then he'll tell everybody about what really happened, that I nearly killed him.
That he attacked you mean?
And that you covered the whole thing up. Peter, if Jack talks, you could lose your license.
I'm well aware of that.
But I think he has more to lose than we do. If he starts making accusations...
No, I have more to lose. I can't stand the thought of that man being in my life anymore.
Amanda, you can always get a court order.
No. No court orders. I swear to you, if he does wake up, I really will kill him. I swear I will.
Meanwhile, Sydney's been recording this whole thing on the dictaphone. Mm-hmm. So later, Peter leaves and Sydney busts out the incriminating cassette to Michael and then deflates when he tells her he knows all about Amanda, Peter, and Jack, and that if Sydney does anything with the tape, she will bring Michael down with them. Clip 28.
Michael, this is $1 million tape. If I could at least just threaten Amanda with it.
Sid. Everything in life is not about exploitation and betrayal.
What are you nuts? Of course it is.
You never change. I care about Amanda, and I don't want to see her hurt.
Oh, right. And then to this.
Amanda, that. You wouldn't be acting this way if it were my ass on the line.
Oh, come on, Sid, you know I would. Yeah, I'm a very caring person. Now, I told you once before, this stuff is over your head, and I don't want to see you get hurt. So, stay out of it.
I will try, Michael. I really will try.
This weird, like, buddy movies, older brother, little sister thing that's happening is not the worst.
No, I mean, don't hate
it. I love them both, so, yeah.
I agree. Back to Jack's room. Amanda monitors the machines he's hooked up to before putting her hand on a plug, but then not pulling it, which is when he wakes up and says he's sorry. He didn't mean to hurt her. So he was fully intubated when she turned her back on him. Now we see his hand is, like, on his chest, sort of, like, near the tube. Like, he's just casually pulled it out. And, like, no, people gag when a doctor removes an intubation.
Yeah,
like,
we've seen this on a million medical shows. Come on.
Exactly. This is going to come back in the next episode, so put a pin in that for now. She tells him not to try to talk. He says he'll never hurt her again and she should go live her own life. And he feebly reaches a hand out to her, and even as she's saying she hopes he means it, he wraps his hand around her wrist and yanks her onto his chest, choking her. And this was apparently too much too soon for old Jack, and as he is in the process of choking her, his heart rate speeds up and then he flatlines. And as he's dying, Amanda smacks him in the face, which is when we see Sydney's in the doorway watching the whole thing, clip 29.
Why, Amanda? That is no way to treat your husband.
Oh, God. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's the episode. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Kimberly, she wanted a job and she got it. However improbable this is, she's happy and
yeah,
good for her, I guess.
Sure.
not Brooke sure. For the pregnancy, that's for sure.
Yeah, no. I guess Richard, he made me laugh a couple times and he got what he wanted. So sure.
Least valuable player. I mean, still Jack, of course. But I'm going to also say Dr. Joyce Brothers in her impeccable judgment.
Yeah. Haley. Like, her and right. then her?
Yep.
And fair. Also the one you raised? Ugh. Not doing well.
Nope.
Next time on Again With This, more mid-90s computing leads to more Matt Agita. Joe buys a one-way ticket to Richard's pants. Allison's plane isn't the only thing that wants to go down. And autopsy, 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 autopsy. No need to investigate the cause of death of your retinas. It's obviously our visual aids. And you'll find those for this and every episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book, which 1 year ago I was recording in a closet during a heat wave while wearing a bathing suit that is not nearly as cool as Amanda's. You can follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis, where, as we mentioned, any level of support gets you extra content. I'm not so great waffle iron caper, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Faulknerian Shrine, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is swimsuit competitor, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Have a nice trip.
Well played.